The scripture this morning can be found in the Pew Bibles. I'm going to be reading from James, the third chapter, through the fourth chapter, which will go into verse 3. It'll be in your Pew Bibles on pages 855 and 856. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good life, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This wisdom is not such as comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceful, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, without uncertainty or uncertainty. And the harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. What causes wars and what causes fightings among you? Is it not your passions that are at war in your members? You desire and do not have, so you kill. And you covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and wage war. You do not have because you do not ask.
I want to start out this morning with James's question. Verse 13, James starts out our passage with, who is wise and understanding? I think they are wise. And my translation says wise and understanding. I think that's an interesting word. Do we always understand one another? Well, if we look at verse 13 again, in the second part of it, James says, show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. And then he goes on to contrast the person who is not wise. He says, but if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. In other words, if your motives are not right, don't be speaking out because it's not going to be the truth. So then, if I take those together, a good life is gentleness born of wisdom. It's someone who is not motivated out of selfishness or out of self-ambition, not envious, then a wise person to me would be those who are self-giving and those who are motivated by God. It's the wisdom from above. And James goes on to say that that wisdom is pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and love, and a person who loves all equally. Well, with that criterion in my mind, I thought about the people who I felt were most wise in our world. And I thought about Mother Teresa and her work in India. She said that she saw Jesus in the face of every person that she met. She dared to touch the poorest of the poor. I also think of Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter won the Nobel Peace Prize, and it said when they gave that to him, said it was for his decades of untiring effort to find peaceful solutions to international conflicts, to advance democracy and human rights, and to promote economic and social development. And I will say, this is my little bit of fame. When I was going to be ordained in the Baptist church, there were very few of us who were female and were allowed to be ordained in the Baptist church, but I was in the Cooperative Baptist Church, and we were those that felt like women ought to have leadership positions in the church, and among other things, felt like we would live our life according to Jesus's life, and those were in our statement of faith. Well, Jimmy Carter was also a Cooperative Baptist. And the weeks, before I was going to be ordained, he had a big article in the Atlanta Journal that said that he was leaving the Southern Baptist Convention and going to formally be Cooperative Baptist because he believed that there were talented and good women that were called by God and that should be preaching. And you know, when you have somebody who is well known that will stand up for his beliefs, that does a lot. Well, I was so thrilled that my daughter and I got a little bit silly, I guess, and I thought, I'm going to send him an invitation to my ordination, and I'm going to thank him for what he did. So I did, you know, not expecting to ever get a thing. Well, he sent back, on my invitation, he sent back a little note and said, "Congratulations, Reverend Norsworthy." Reverend, that meant a lot to me. He dared to stand up for the little guy and dared to boost someone who was pretty beat up at that point, or had been. The other people that I thought about were Linda and Millard Fuller. They were millionaires, and they, I don't know their full journey, but at one point became convicted of having so much that they decided to sell everything to start Habitat for Humanity, which builds houses now all over the world. These are people who I think live their lives in gentleness, born of wisdom, self-giving to the ultimate. Well, then I look at my own life and I think, oh my goodness. So I read chapter 4, verse 1, which is a little different than the Revised Standard. I'm going to read it in the New Revised. It's a little, like I said, different. It says, "Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you?" I think the Revised Standard said within your members, and that's kind of says congregation to me. But this says, within myself, there seems to be a war going on. And there is. I will tell you, there is a war going on. I want to be Mother Teresa. My children thought that I would be in Thailand at this point in my life, but I'm not. I chose to stay here, and I chose my lifestyle, and I love to travel. That takes money. I love my home. It's too big for one person. I am not giving everything I've got. I am not selling everything that I have to help those who are in need. And so within my life, I have this warring going on. Now the other side of me says, well, is it fair to sell everything? And then when you're old and can't move around, you have to move in with your children? Is that fair to the children? So I have good reasons always for how I live and who I am. I feel guilty about having a good life. Get up here and I preach self-giving, but I continue to live the way that I live. So in the South, we would say, preacher's gone to meddling, and that means meddling in your lives, but no, today I'm meddling in my own. I bear myself in my feelings about my life. But so it was hard to write this sermon. It was very personal. Well, Friday night, I watched the movie The Same Kind of Different as Me, and I recommend it. Beautiful movie. And I'm not going to spoil it for you. But in that movie, I was so impressed with this person who had everything, actually a whole family, that had everything that they could want, but yet they could connect and be with the homeless in a very real and close manner, touching the homeless and touching their lives. And so I thought back to my life. I've shared with you before that I worked with homeless women for, I think it was about a year. And I was given the job to go in there and teach them Christian values, which, you know, is a big, pretty broad area. But, you know, I felt like I could do that. I was a good person. I hadn't messed up, you know, good family, good home life, good house, you know, had taking care of the things that our family needed, and I thought, well, maybe I could share some of what I've done with these ladies and make their life better. Well, that was where I was wrong. Because, you see, then I was kind of descending upon them as God, and, you know, I know how to fix you, and this is what you need to do, and listen to me, and we'll get you straightened out, and then you can get back on your road. Oh, no, that was so wrong. They did not let me in. There were seven of them. We sat every single week for a couple of hours talking and sharing, and I was not part of that group. Until the day that I began to really love them. Until that day when I began to learn from them. And that day when I realized they were more like Jesus than I was. Because they had nothing. And they relied on their faith. They were stumbling and they were having a tough time. But they lived every minute of their life living within that faith in their lives. Did I? Oh, no, because I didn't need that much. So I thought about God. Yeah, God was there, and I love God, but I didn't rely on God like those women relied on God. I learned from them, and you know what? They began to love me. And when I was ordained, they brought a van with their children and everybody. And in the Baptist tradition, everybody comes down and lays hands on the person being ordained. And I had little black hands, and I had little white hands, and I had homeless hands, and I had a professor's hands. I had all types of hands touching my head. Meant more to me than a lot of things in my life. So how do I reconcile this life like Jesus that James talks about, this self-giving, and as those that I've mentioned, my heroes, and they're giving away everything, and this life that I also love, where I am comfortable in living the way that I live. Well, James goes on to talk about war and murder coming out of this selfishness. And I don't believe anybody in this room is murdered. I don't know that any of us really envy that much that we wish somebody were dead. I can't relate to that. But I do wonder if we don't maybe cause death in other ways. The U.S. is 5% of the world's population, but yet we use 24% of the world's energy. And we make 30% of the world's waste. So I wonder in that way if maybe we do cause death by the way that we live. But when I went to the internet to look at the statistics, to get the exact statistics, and I always go to documents that I feel are legitimate. I'm very careful when I research on the internet. But as I was doing that, I found an article by the Foundation for Economic Education. And I thought, you know, I have my opinion, which I've shared with you in this war within myself. But then I thought, I don't know much about world economics. Can I really get in front of a group of people and preach what I'm saying without understanding world economics? So I read this article by Russell Roberts, and I found it very interesting. In his view, and I don't say that I believe, agree with him totally, but I'm going to throw out what he had to say. In his view, there's mutually beneficial exchanges. That's when I give and you receive, and we both benefit from it. So when I go to Workday Cafe and I have lunch, I am receiving a good lunch, and I'm served by good people. They, in turn, make wages. The place can pay for the building. Suppliers have wages, and it trickles on down. So everybody gets a benefit out of this exchange. Well, Russell Roberts says the opposite of that is zero-sum game. And he says, that says, when I benefit, when I receive, it's at your expense. So if I get something, I'm going to have a better or a bigger receipt than you are. So in that scenario, the poor get poorer and the rich get richer. Now, America was guilty of that, and he says we no longer are, I don't know. But we were guilty of that when we went overseas and we extracted raw resources, but we did not give back to the overseas communities. We just took it and came home. West Virginia had the same problem. We had out-of-state big companies that came in, extracted our natural resources, but didn't give back to our state, causing many, many problems. And that was lumber and as well as gas and coal. But Russell Roberts said, if America had a religious revival, and hang in here with me, if everybody had a religious revival, and we all decided that we would work less for less pay, and spend more time with our families, then we would then use less of the world's energy, right? Because we're not having to drive as many times in the car, and the lights in the businesses won't have to be on or whatever. So we would use less world energy. But he says if that happened, the world still would not profit because we're the ones that know how to extract it. And they don't. And so he, and then he also said, which kind of, I went, ooh. He said that if the wealthy gave away all of their money, it would be called slavery. I'm just throwing out his words. So he says, mutually beneficial America is where Bill Gates makes software. We need software. We want software, so we buy it. Bill Gates has the money. He then goes out and spends, which helps others, the suppliers and the retailers and all of that. So everybody is benefiting. But that was all the scenarios he gave. Mutually beneficial or taking advantage of someone. But James says there's wisdom from above. And that wisdom that comes from above is pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and no partiality. Wars have been fought over resources. I went to Israel. I had an outstanding tour of Israel with other theologians. And we were toured by the Palestinians. They were our guides. We wanted to hear the other side. It was amazing how much land over there is being fought over water. We think it's religious. Well, sometimes it comes down to water and land and where the biggest population is, and the government can tax people all over the world. A lot of our wars are fought over resources. So I believe in a world where all people are equal. If everyone's basic needs were met, I believe peace would prevail. Now, in Jesus' day and in James' day, there were limited resources. We know today that that everybody could be fed. It's been proven, economists have proven that everyone can be fed. Our resources are not scarce like they were in Jesus and James' day. In those days, in Jesus' day, to get ahead, you either had to know somebody, know the leader in the line, or you had to stand on somebody else. You had to hurt them to get ahead or shoot someone in the back. But today is a new day. James calls for wisdom that humbly recognizes our limitations, that recognizes that all people are created in God's image, and that God's image must prevail. And I believe as Christians that we could come up with another way, a better way, where everyone would live better. And this morning I was a little late coming in because I listened to Krista Tippett's On Being on Sunday morning. It's wonderful. And this morning, she was interviewing a man called Seth Godin. I looked him up quick. His worth is $34 million. He did not necessarily say he was Christian. But he said that our problem is scarcity versus abundance. We're always scared that somebody else is going to get our stuff. We want to get more resources before they get those resources because we feel we need those resources. And he said that causes fear, and then it just builds. So he was talking about the goodness of the internet. He said, people are tribal. We always grab the folks that we know and we like, and we have our little groups, which are kind of tribal. You know, you can go bigger. America is a tribe, and so our tribe is against another tribe often. But he's saying that the fear factor, the scarcity factor, causes these groups of people to be against each other. But he said what people really want is not stuff, but connection and time. Connection and time. And he says that is why the internet is such a good place for people to connect. You can connect with people all over the world who are the same as you are and give you that connection, that sharing. And so he said that in our marketing today, we're always yelling, you need more stuff to be happy. And they show you stuff and kind of beat you over the head with it. But he has a new marketing plan that just says, listen to my story and let's connect. I have something. I have art to give you. If you appreciate my kind of art, let's connect. Let's give each other time to connect. So it's that scarcity versus connection in his view. God created us with great minds. And I think that we can find a way to meet all needs. So, do we all go home today and sell everything that we have and give it away? Or do we use our minds and begin to look around and find those connections, those ways that all needs may be met using God's wisdom from above? Let's bow for just a moment. Oh God, you have created us in your image, beautifully and wonderfully made. Help us to connect with one another in deep ways that your wisdom may prevail. In Christ's name, amen.